Welcome to the Intelligent Investing Podcast, where modern portfolio theory can suck it. A student of the school of Graham and Doddsville and a clergy member of the Church of Warren Buffett. Here's your host, Eric Schlein.
Hi, this is Eric Schlein. You are listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast. We have Dan Shum on as a guest today from NoNameStocks.com. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Thanks, Eric. Welcome. I mean, good to be here.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for welcoming. You know what? You're the first guest that's ever welcomed me onto the show. So we're having a mutual welcome, and I think that's kind of cool. So, thank you for welcoming me onto the show, and welcome to the show, and we walk on the show together, and here we are.
Awesome.
Yeah, right on. So, I think what you do is really cool. You want to just give our listeners a little bit of taste about, you know, who you are, what you do, and tell us a little bit about your blog, No Name Stocks. I think you're fascinating. I love that you're on. I've actually wanted you on for longer than you even knew I existed.
Well, thanks. Yeah, this is cool. This is the first time I've done any kind of podcast. So I'm 37 years old.
We'll find out
old.
If you want to do any more after this. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't usually do a whole lot of public speaking. So
I know, but it took me a while to get here, so I'm very honored to have you on the show. All right, anyway, let's hear more about you.
Right on. So, so I'm 37. I'm an engineer. I live in the Bay Area, Silicon Valley, up here in California. I'm married. I have three kids. And I do stock investing and blogging kind of as a hobby in my spare time. And I started a little over 5 years ago. So I was like 32. And I didn't know anything financial. None of my education was anything financial related. I didn't know what stocks were. I didn't know what a dividend was. I didn't know what a PE ratio was. And I just kind of, I had lost a job because the startup I worked for went under. And,
hey, Dan,
and
we just, had. There's a little bit of clicking on your end. I don't know.
Sorry.
That's okay.
That's fidgeting.
Got it. Okay.
So I had lost a job because the startup went under, and so we moved, and it just really kind of showed me how dependent my family was on my income, because my wife is not, since the kid number two, she hasn't brought home an income. And so I thought, let's see if I can educate myself financially, and maybe there's something else out there to diversify our family away from just my salary. And I read a lot of books, and I ended up finding stocks, and really oldschoolvalue.com is one blog that helped me a lot. Just there's some good lists of books to read and other blogs to follow, and so down this path.
That's a great site, by the way. I love it.
Yeah, really cool. And Jay is great. He'll respond to you if you have questions, whatever. He used to have a chat board on there that I would visit. And so I just read a lot of books, and I started out with buying stocks that were kind of these large cap, huge Buffett companies, and
modern Buffett companies, I would say.
I mean, these ones, because I went through these Mary Buffett books, and she talked about Buffett's his portfolio, and she went through some case studies and why he owns these, and it was all these ones that have been around for 100 years, Wells Fargo and Union Pacific kind of companies.
I thought her books were kind of garbage, honestly.
I mean, for me, this was like someone who had never heard of a stock 2 weeks prior. Okay. So really, it was great.
Okay. Oh,
it
right
was
on.
Just like, when I started, the first books I read were Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Hmm. And it was just because I had heard it on the radio. And then after a few of those, then I thought, what else do I know? And it was Jim Cramer.
What did you think of Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
I mean, I think it's a scam. I think the guy just wants to sell more books and sell more, have you come to his shows or whatever.
Yeah, when people tell me, I'm like, I'm just getting into learning investing. I got Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I'm just like, toss it out. Just don't waste your time. You're going down the wrong rabbit hole.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that he emphasized that I liked was that he really pounded in, you need to have this continuing financial education throughout your life, which is part of his thing because he wants you to keep buying his books and buying all his stuff. Yeah. But for me, as someone who had no financial education, I thought, you know, that really makes sense. And, but yeah, I stopped it right there. He talked a lot about having a business and, you know, maybe getting into like a franchising something and, you know,
yeah. Yeah.
So I moved on. I read some, Jim Cramer books. It's just insane, but he at least taught me, you know, what's a PE ratio and what are stocks. And
booyah! I don't have the cool sound effects on my show, though.
Yeah, you need to work on
also pain.
So the Mary Buffett books were kind of refreshing.
You know what? I think I'm going to have some sound effects for the rest of this episode. Go ahead.
So the Mary Buffett books were more down-to-earth realistic than those two, you know. Mm-hmm. And she went through some of these stocks, why Buffett had bought it, and looking out 10 years and annualizing earnings and stuff like that. And so it was good, I thought, intro for someone who was new.
Yeah.
But, you know, not really for anyone who's experienced.
Yeah. So then how did you get into these, you know, buying these very obscure companies and starting out of the startup?
So, yeah, so along the way, then I found oldschoolvalue.com, right, as I said, and mm-hmm. and then I started reading books from him, and Jay posted about a company one time that was this little, I can't even remember the name anymore, but they did like medical pumps, and they were a small micro cap, you know, $20 million company.
It's kind of big for you though, right?
Yeah. And so I owned that one, and I was also owning these other, like Apple and Microsoft, and these big ones, they just... Eventually, you look at how many articles there are on Seeking Alpha about these big companies and how much competition you have if you're trying to play in that arena. Mm-hmm. And I really, like, I don't think I can play there. You know, I don't have an MBA. There's people, there's all these hedge funds out there with PhDs all over. And at the same time, I was having this little microcap that was doing well, and I didn't have to put that much effort to follow the company because there's not that much news, you know.
Right.
And it went well, so I kept kind of going in that trajectory, you know, going small. And there's been studies like, was that Tweedy Browns, what has worked in investing?
Yeah, what's worked in investing, yeah.
You know, and they show basically the smaller you go, the less liquid, you know, the better average returns there are. And it makes sense because there's just less competition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And so, yeah, so I found this company, Greystone Logistics. They make pallets and, I did a write-up on Jay's board, and I thought that really, it really helped me learn the company good.
And so how'd you find it?
I was searching for like odd lot arb opportunities, and so I was Googling odd lot and stuff, and I found Greystone. They had tried to go private a year prior, and
so you Googled it. You didn't search the SEC. Was it? Were you searching SEC filings, or were you actually just Googling that, and it came up?
I think it was just Googling. I mean, I used to do these odd lot arbs, you know, you can like, if a company's doing a tender, they might pay out the odd lots first.
You buy like 199 shares and they do a 200 for one reverse split and you know, all that.
Something like that. Right. Yeah. And so you can make $50 or $100 or something, but if you're starting out small, which I was, and mm-hmm. then it was great. And so I would do that with part of my, and I would just Google it and I would have like I'd just Google reverse split or odd lot or whatever and go through.
Oh, cool.
So anyway, so I found Greystone and it wasn't an odd lot opportunity because that was the year prior, but I learned enough about the company. I thought it was interesting enough that I wrote it up on Jay's site and I got some good feedback. And what I really did was learn the company. Like I had never investigated a company that well. So then I wanted to keep doing that. So eventually I wrote up another one and I put it up on Seeking Alpha and that went well. Like I got some good feedback and stuff, but I hate Seeking Alpha, how they hide everything, you know, behind a paywall.
It's gotten worse over the years too.
It has. It really has.
Now now I think like conference call transcripts are behind paywalls now.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
It's really sad. Cause they have so many articles, but yeah. So after that, like eventually then there was this other company, TIK, Telelectronics, that I thought I knew enough about to write another article. And I decided I didn't want to put it on Seeking Alpha. So I said, well, I'll make a blog and maybe I'll have maybe I'll be able to write about a company or two a year, because I didn't have that many ideas. You know, I'm just doing this in my spare time. And so I wrote about that, and then people started contacting me. I wrote about IEHC, which was one that I got from Whopper Investments.
What is that?
IEHC, they make electrical connectors.
Okay.
They've been doing really good lately, like the stock.
No, you said Walker Investments, was that?
Oh, Whopper.
Whopper. What is that? Yeah, what is that?
It was a great blog, and the guy doesn't do it anymore because he now manages money.
Got it.
So, yeah, he's at Rangeley.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I know that.
Yeah, Whopper was awesome. He was also one of the reason I kept going smaller. And I found that one and like Oddball Stocks and mm-hmm. OTC Adventures, like these blogs that I just, they would post about these companies that looked so cheap. And it was amazing that they could have this information that other people didn't really have because they just didn't search it out.
Well, you know, the guy from OTC Adventures, he's at SiteStar now.
Oh, Dave.
Waters.
Yes.
Yeah, he's one of the portfolio managers now.
I mean, I knew that all these guys like Whopper, he's running money, and yeah, OTC Adventures, and then Nate from Oddballs like has his newsletter and
he's been on the show bank. Actually. We had a very good.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he was an interesting guy. I'll actually post a link to his episode in the show notes too, because you guys have a lot in common.
Yeah, those were some of my favorite blogs, and now just kind of they died. But
yeah.
So yeah, so then once I started and I posted about IEHC, and then people started emailing me, saying you emailed me. You know, people will email and they'll be like, "Hey, I like your blog post about such and such. How about these other stocks?" And they would just give me all these ideas. And one guy in particular, I became good friends with. And he's been doing this forever, and he sends me emails with just like lists of, "Hey, how about these ones?" and like 20 names.
And have you ever asked him where he finds this stuff?
He's a broker, and he's in his 60s, and he's been doing this for, you know, since he was 20. And he's always focused on these tiny names, so you can never mention a name to him that he doesn't already know. And he just reads filings all day.
Yeah.
So he'll send me something, "Hey, check this one out," and like they had just posted a press release. Or an 8K or whatever, and he just goes through and he reads them all, and it's like once you've been doing it forever, you know all the names, so he like can very quickly goes through all these things and he remembers everything. His memory's amazing.
Yeah.
But anyways, so all these names, like, you know, that I write about are mostly from him.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
People just give me ideas, and then so that's how when I originally started my blog, I thought I would only post maybe a few times a year.
Yeah.
But then I got this kind of hidden benefit of people talking to me. And here we are.
Well, yeah, and I had reached out to you when you had written about Conair. I've been familiar with that company for about a year.
Yeah, I was really surprised when you knew about them. A lot of these companies, it's funny, if you know someone else is buying it, like you can see each other's purchases, they're so illiquid, you know.
Was that you, by the way, was that you buying the other day?
No, it wasn't.
No, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Because it was up like 60% on like $100.
Yeah, that happened.
And then, but you know what's actually very interesting is when that happened last week, I just put in like an order for like $100 to see if anything would hit. There was instantly a 96 cent per share order went through at 100, you know, for like $100. It was like a nothing, but I was surprised that, because I do occasionally with Conair, I'll do like a sell order at like $1.25 or a buy order at like, you know, 60 cents or, and nothing ever goes through. And I've even tried some test orders at like, you know, $1 before and nothing went through, but the other day it went through in a second.
Yeah, that one, I don't know, the float's tiny. And
why don't we talk about that, because that's a company that's gone light recently. Is that the word? What would you call it? Undark light?
Undark light, yeah, coming back to the light is what I called it.
I like that. It came back to the light. Why don't we start with that company? Because, you know, and full disclosure, I am a shareholder, and I assume, are you a shareholder?
I'm also, yes.
Oh, yeah. So between the two of us, we probably own like... I think I own like a half a percent of the whole business now or something. Control it at least.
Yeah. There's actually another company, Isomet, which I wrote about a year ago, 2 years ago, IOMT, that I bought 1% of the company for $200. It's like you can accumulate some big positions in these companies.
Hilarious. Why don't we start with Con Air? We'll do a few of these. I think it's going to be fun. So tell us about Con Air. I'm going to pretend I know nothing about the business. What is Con Air?
Right. So Con Air, CNGA, they trade OTC. They've been around since, I think, the 60s or something, and they do HVAC.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. I was looking at old Walker's manuals that they were in from the 60s.
Really?
Yeah.
So they've been doing HVAC for a long time, but the guy who, the majority owner, he wasn't like a founder. I don't know how he exactly when he came in the picture, but they deregistered in 1995, and they just stopped communicating. And they did, and the stock was around, I don't know, 50 cents or something. And it just dropped, eventually coming all the way down to half a cent in 2012. Of course, like, nobody had heard from them. So like shareholders have no idea if this company even exists.
Which, by the way, if you lived on Long Island, you would have known they existed. Because they actually have a pretty good, apparently they have a pretty good reputation on Long Island, actually.
Well, that's good. And yeah, I don't know. I have no idea what was going on with the company. I wasn't involved. I knew nothing about them.
Mm-hmm.
And then in September of 2017, they all of a sudden filed press releases and financials with OTC Markets again after 20 years of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So since then, they've been filing with OTC Markets. They've been putting up press releases, though their press releases are very... Have you read them? They're like, some of them are like two sentences.
I think there, one that they were accepting Bitcoin for payments now or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And what they're doing is they're moving into the franchising business. And so they have up new website. And so if you want to get into the HVAC business, they can train you and help you get your license and help set you up with your own Con Air franchise. And I think that franchising business model is why they're filing again. Because
it seems like it.
Yeah.
Because it would be kind of sketchy to say we've been a public company since the 60s, and then you become you're looking to become a franchise owner, and you can't find financials for it. That would be a little sketchy.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think the guy wants to be able to attract franchisees and also attract people to hire, and he wants to offer some stock options, and he wants to be legitimate. So he probably has to have like audited financials and stuff. So I think he was kind of forced to come back to the light.
100%.
Yeah, so now the stock, I mean, like you said, 100 shares took it up to 96 cents, but it's been mostly around like 60 to 70 cents since September of last year.
Yeah. And, you know, how are you looking at valuation for a company like this?
You know what? Some of these, like this one, it's not even so much the valuation. It's like there's some big change happening.
Right.
You know, this company was gone and dead, and now they're back, and this guy seems motivated, and he's bringing about change. And so that, to me, is a big reason to buy, if it's not looking expensive.
It's, what, like 4 or 5 times earnings or something like that, right?
They have had some good earnings, but let's see. So their latest annual revenue is $6 million. And they have what, 5.8 million shares out. So over $1 in revenue. They earned like 12 cents a quarter a couple quarters ago.
Yep.
Which I don't know how recurring that will be.
Well, you could make the argument that if the franchise business takes off, it's going to be higher than that in the future.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I would value this one at somewhere over $1, and then we'll see where it goes.
Yeah. Interesting. All right.
I'm doing evaluations. I usually don't get very precise.
You can't with these things. There's no way to.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, the way that I look at it is, you know, you don't have you probably don't have much downside, and your upside could be pretty significant if this becomes a big business.
For sure. Yeah, if the franchising catches on, and they he keeps putting out press releases about getting authorized to do franchising in different states, in different regions.
I did speak to the CEO on the phone. He gave me his cell phone number, and he did say that, you know, because I said to him, I said, you know, the franchise business is a tough business. You know, is it just like, you know, you or you know, have you brought in people with, you know, actual franchise experience? I said, if you haven't, you really should. And he said, he's like, yeah, we've actually brought in some people with franchise experience who have a good track record in the industry. So it's interesting.
That's good. Yeah, he had posted on LinkedIn like a job spec last fall, I think.
Yeah.
And so maybe that resulted in some of these people because he was talking about going into franchising and wanting to hire.
Yeah, no, he seemed really serious on growing the business, like significantly larger. That was just my takeaway from it.
Yeah. I'm excited about that one. It's, you know, who knows how it'll be because it's one of these where it's like they have big change.
Yeah.
And they've shown before that they can just disappear. So hopefully that doesn't happen again. But
yeah, well, hey, if you have any interest in some liquidity, I'm more than happy to buy all your shares. If just put it out there. So I'm being totally serious. If you want to at some point sell me all your shares, I'd be more than happy to discuss that with you.
All right. Well, right now I'm good.
Okay. See, with these companies, you can do market transactions over the phone.
Yes. I'm not the first person to ask me, like, will I sell them some shares of some company?
Well, I've had a hard time buying it. It's like I had one order and only half of it has gone through. So.
Yeah.
That was in May.
Yeah. Yeah, it took me a while to get what I wanted on Conair as well. I have some stocks that I, you know, it'll take me a year or more to get what I want.
Get the shares. Likewise. All right. So let's, anything else about Con Air? You want to move to the next one?
We can go to the next one.
All right. Why don't we talk about Hapag Digital? I think I pronounced that right. Hapag. Hapag.
Hapag.
Okay. Tell us about this one. I don't actually know much about this one.
So this one, I also, you know, full disclosure, I also own Hapag. Pretty much everything I blog about, I own. But yeah, so this is another one that they haven't been dark as long as Conair was. I think when did they deregister? Like in 2014. So they deregistered in 2014, and the stock was at like 20 some cents, and it's now at 5 cents. And they haven't communicated since 2014. So some of these, when companies deregister from the SEC, they don't have to file reports with the public anymore, but they're still governed by state law. And so a lot of companies are incorporated in Delaware, and Delaware state law requires companies to provide financials to shareholders. So if a shareholder requests financials, they have to give that shareholder those financials, though they don't have to publicly, you know, put them out on a website or anything. But Hapag won't do either. So I've tried contacting them. I told them the state laws, and basically they just come back and say, no, we have deregistered. We don't have to communicate.
You know, a lot of companies will pull that kind of bullshit, and they'll say, well, we're technically now private, so we'd have to sign an NDA. Did they want you to sign an NDA?
No, they didn't ask anything about that. No.
You could always put in a books and records request.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how far I want to go. I mean, honestly, like I said, I do this in my spare time. Yeah. Like, I don't have a lawyer to just like contact for this stuff. Some other people have told me they might try to get some shares and like contact the company. I don't know. We'll see.
Interesting. But,
yeah. I mean, I sent the company, you know, you know, like a letter, email too, like quoting them these state laws. Like, look, here's the state law.
Yeah.
You have to give me this information. And they're daring me to take them to court or something, you know, which I'm not going to do because it's too much of a hassle. But,
and these companies, I mean, if they had 300 shareholders on record, right, they would have to file. Is that correct? Is it 300?
Yeah, but it's 300, but it's only at the end of the year. So it's like on, I forget if it's calendar year or their fiscal year, but like on the last day of the year, if they have over that much, then they have to file publicly.
Right.
They have to come back. But the thing is with that, like, I mean, if you read my blog, you know, like, what a fun rule. This SEC shareholders of record rule is horrible, where they count everyone that owns stock through one brokerage and street name as one shareholder. So,
yeah,
you know, thousands of people could own through Schwab or Fidelity or whatever, and it's only one shareholder. So,
yeah.
They, Papag, in their 10K from when they first sold shares, they said that the number of shareholders is 77. This is in 1995. Mm-hmm. And they said the company believes they're in excess of 750 beneficial holders of common stock. So they know about this. They know
right.
that they have more than 300 real shareholders. But according to SEC, they don't have more than 300. So, but the company, I mean, if you go by, so this one I own and I do not have financials for.
Mm.
The thing that got me interested in them is they put out a press release about a new product a couple of months ago. It was their first press release in forever. Of course, they didn't include the stock symbol because they don't want anyone knowing about their company. But if you go to their website, it's like a vibrant website. They have products all over Amazon. They redid their website like in February. If their market, if their number of shares is the same as it was in 2014, the market cap is about 500,000. But even in 2014, they had like $30 million annually in revenue. So, I mean, I think it should be worth, I would guess, a couple bucks. But if they don't ever communicate again, we might have to wait until they sell the company and retire in 20 years. So,
or you force their hand in a lawsuit or something like that.
Or someone does that, yeah. I mean, I went back and forth with the CFO by email for a few weeks, you know, asking him, and he would say, no, I won't. And then, but it went nowhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, they make like, they make a lot of these like digital video electronics. So if you want to play cable through your computer or hook up your computer to the TV, or like, I think they have some products for like people who do gaming and post their videos on YouTube, like to record that stuff. And it's like an exciting business. I think it's growing. So it's wait and see.
All right.
There's a lot of these companies out there that don't communicate, but some of them, like, it looks like it's a dying business. The website hasn't been updated in 10 years and that kind of thing. But Hapag is not like that. It looks like a thriving company.
What's the most like mysterious company that you have come across that just baffles you, blows your mind? Anything? Is there anything like that you've come across?
There's one that I won't tell you the symbol because I'd like to buy shares. But
okay.
there's one. It's tiny. Their market cap is $100,000 or something like that. $200,000. I don't know. It's tiny. But what they do is if you call them on the phone, they'll quote you back the weather. This company's been in business forever, and their revenue is like nothing. And because it's dropped so much, it's like this ancient business. Like I was asking my friend, why do they even exist? And this is like something that people used to do before the internet. And this company is still around and still doing it.
Huh. And why, how do they make money?
They still have customers. I don't know if it's like, you know, a very aging population that is still using their services, or if it's like, I think maybe disabled or blind. Because you could do the same thing, hey Siri, and ask her the weather, but people use their services.
Interesting.
But it's one of these that's just, it's like, it's family owned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the stock price is at nothing, the market cap's at nothing, and I think they'll have to do something to change at some point. They'll have to either buy everyone out, or try to shift into a different business. A lot of these companies, these tiny companies, like, you know, what they were doing kind of stops working eventually, and then they cause some big change, go in a different direction. And if it works, you can see huge gains. If it doesn't, you don't, you know. But
interesting.
And that's the basis of a lot of the stocks I buy.
Huh. I'm not going to say the name, but I may have just found it. Is it? Do they make money from advertising? Because I'm on some.
I don't know.
I am on a call. I am on a telephone advertising for weather right now. All right, I won't say the name just in case I'm right. that's interesting though. Is there anything else that you've uncovered, or maybe some things in the past that were just like some fascinating stories? You have anything like that?
Sure. I have one that I own right now.
Okay.
Fortran, FRTN, is an interesting one. So this is a company. I forget what they even do. but the stock.
Yeah.
I
think it's funny.
Like I make a lot of these decisions. To me, I'm like, I'm fishing in a certain pool. And so I don't try to learn that deeply about really any of these companies, because I think within this pool, I'll do well. And so Fortran and a lot of these other ones, I forget even what they do, but,
FRTN,
but just FRTN, something with electronics, I think, but they, so if you pull up a chart, they were up at like 60 cents just a couple of years ago, year and a half,
2016,
and then 2017 even. And then, you know, revenue kind of dropped off and the stock went down to 15 and then all the way down to like 5 cents, 3 cents, down to nothing. And that's when I bought. So I bought like, you know, at like 4 cents or something beginning of this year.
Is this they correct? They have a $58,000 market cap, or is this?
I don't think it's 58,000.
I'm just looking at Yahoo Finance. They have a $58,000 market cap. That could be wrong.
I think that's wrong.
Okay.
Just a minute. Yeah, no. No, it's like 5 million, 6
okay.
million.
Okay.
They have like 27 million shares out.
Got it. It's actually interesting. They have an investors. If you go on their website, there's actually an investors tab, which is not common for a company like this.
Yeah, good luck. They have that, but they won't contact. They won't talk back to you. But so the stock dropped down to like 4 cents, right? And so I buy it. Like revenue had dropped, but but it's like the stock was at an all-time low. And so I'm basically betting that the company's not going to die and something's going to happen and it'll go up. And then since then, they've stopped communicating. So they were current on all their filings, but now they haven't posted anything since November. So they've missed a 10K and 2Qs, I think, since then.
Well, and on their website, the last quarterly report's from February 9th, 2016.
Well, if you go to OTC Markets, there's more recent.
Okay.
So they've been filing through OTC Markets.
Got it. Okay.
But so the company hasn't communicated, right, since like November, December. So the stock was sitting down or at 4 cents. And then all of a sudden in May, it starts going up, like a lot. And now it's sitting, it got as high as 35 cents, and it's now at 22. But there's no information, and the company hasn't communicated. So it's like the opposite. Like, I always complain to these dark companies that they're causing the stock to drop to nothing. Because when they stop communicating, people sell, and it just drops to nothing. But this one's the opposite. It was down at nothing, and they stopped, and then now it's going up for some reason. But the volume hasn't been super high, so it's not really easy to sell into. But
could be one person buying it, you know?
It could be one person. It could be an insider because they know that something's happening.
Yeah.
Who knows?
And the SEC would never investigate something like that for that small.
No, they don't care.
Nope.
Well, you can see something similar, actually, with Con Air. You know, for like the couple years before they came back to the light, the stock came up, and then it was sitting there, and, you know, why would it have come up? They had been dark for 20 years.
Right, yeah. Total coincidence, I'm sure. Wink, wink.
Right. So, yeah, so here's Fortran. I'm up like 500% or something, but I'm just kind of sitting and waiting because I want to see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. What's the most interesting, you know, current thing going on right now that you're aware of? I know there was that one company, like PRAC, I think the ticker was, that you wrote about a while back.
crack.
Yeah, what's going on with that one? I remember that being kind of an interesting story. My broker wouldn't let me buy shares, though. I couldn't buy them through Interactive Brokers. Yeah, so I was actually looking to buy shares of that. Yeah,
that one's crazy. So
it's like a whole drama going on there, right?
It's major drama. Yeah, but the drama is kind of over now.
Okay.
But they,
what's the update on the soap opera?
This was another company, they had deregistered, they were dark, and what caught my attention was they put out, all of a sudden, this guy puts out press releases about how he's, raising a stink, and he's, the interesting part was this guy was the CFO.
Right,
and he was talking about how he's trying to get financials from the company, and, how can the CFO not have financials? And it turns out that it's his uncle who's the president. And so it's this guy who was the CFO of the company, who's fighting with his uncle, who's the president. And they were basically the CFO, who was putting out these press releases, wanted control of the company because he thought his uncle was just destroying it, running into the ground.
Right.
And of course, they both owned a lot of stock. And so they both had interest, and they were fighting for control. And this guy was putting out press releases, basically trying to gather up support behind his cause.
The market cap was almost nothing, though, right? It's only a few million dollar market cap, if I remember. Is that wrong? Am I not correct on that? Because I remember it was they each owned $1 million worth of stock, and I was like, is this really worth a whole proxy battle?
Oh, no. And I talked to the guy, and I was like, man, you must be. That was another one that I bought before seeing. We still don't have financials for him, actually. But it was just you have this guy who's putting in so much money and effort. There just has to be value back there, you know?
You have to think, right? Especially with a guy who's a CFO. Well, and that's what attracted me to it. What broker did you use to buy shares, if you don't mind me asking?
Let's see. So Schwab will let me buy whatever.
Okay.
And also Pentrade.
Okay, interesting.
So I have a few different accounts. I have Schwab, Pentrade, and Fidelity.
Yeah.
Fidelity, a few years ago, stopped letting
you
buy anything.
They're terrible, yeah.
Yeah. It's really sad because they have the best interface. I love their website, but yeah. So Prak, this guy, he started putting out press releases, gathering up support for his cause, saying that these people are destroying value. And I think he put out some estimate of value over $1 or something. And the stock was at 30, 40 cents. Mm. Yeah. He put out four different press releases, and he was suing his uncle, and his uncle was suing him, and they were both, you can just imagine the Thanksgiving dinner at that family, but the guy had his dad on his side, and there was dispute of they were both disputing shares that the other had given themselves or something like that. I forget. And so this guy took his uncle and the company to court in both state and federal court. I forget which states he said, but, just a week ago or something, he put out a press release that's finally over with. And so he had asked along the way, he had asked anyone who owns stock to contact him and to sign this letter saying that they agreed with his side.
He had a whole website about it.
Yeah. Optimize PTC. It's still there.
Huh.
And he has all these ideas about how to improve. He wants to get into autonomous car parking structures and all kinds of stuff. He got a new board elected in December, but his uncle didn't recognize the vote as valid or something like that. So he got this board elected, and that was part of his lawsuit, was we have this board elected, but the company's not recognizing it. And so I guess just finally now he put out a press release that his board has been seated.
You can't make this stuff up.
Yeah, so his uncle, signed some paperwork saying that he quits and he releases all of the shares to his nephew. And so now we still don't have any financial statements, though.
Yeah.
But hopefully we will. I mean, the guy's very motivated. I talked to him a few times on the phone and by email, and he would tell me about all this stuff he's doing, this court date and that court date and lawyers, and it sounded really intense. He must have spent a lot of money doing it.
Yeah. Have you ever found one of these companies that were almost intentionally staying under the radar so they could just buy back stock at super cheap prices?
I don't know. I mean, Hapag could be doing that right now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, most of the ones, like, usually what I do is if I hear about one of these, I'll just send them an email and try to get info. And if they don't respond or whatever, I just move on.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, a lot of the ones that I've talked to, it's not that they're actively trying to hide. It's that they're like, they're run by someone who's been doing it forever, and they're aging, and the company is just barely scraping by, and they're not maliciously dark. They're just like, it's hard for them to keep up.
And they get to save some money too.
Yeah.
Right. I got to imagine a lot of these are family businesses, or they're almost run like a private company, and there's no point of spending all the filing, you know, fees. So,
oh, for sure. Right. Yeah, I've asked a few different companies about that, you know, and you'll get estimates anywhere from like a couple hundred grand to like $1.5 million annually.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's a ton of money. If this company has only got a revenue of $5 million and they can save $1 million, I mean, geez.
Right. I'd go dark, too.
Yeah, Dewey Electronics is one I wrote about, and they went dark like last year. And the CEO told me exactly that. He's like, we don't get any benefit from being public, and we think we can save a bunch of money. And now, like, their earnings have come up, so it's actually falling.
Yeah, very interesting. Any other interesting companies that you'd want to talk about while you're on? Or we can wrap it up here, either way.
Besides what, I mean, a lot of these, they're already on my blog, so people can go and read about them there. And then there's a couple other cheap ones that I'm still trying to buy more of before I write about.
And this is guy, this broker just gives you the ideas for the most part.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I've told him, like, man, you should be charging me.
Yeah.
He charged for this. He's like, he doesn't care. Like, he's made a lot of money. And he enjoys the conversation, and we've become friends. And he, you know, he's not trying to pitch anything to me. He'll just send me, like, hey, check this out. And he'll send me, like, 10 stock names. And then I'll just go and look through.
And does he do this stuff, too, where, like, he'll go and call companies and...
No.
No, interesting.
He doesn't go that far. He'll just buy it and wait.
Oh, interesting.
Sometimes he'll call a bitch at him and yell at him for not, you know, not communicating.
Interesting. Very cool. Well, Dan, if people want to get, you know, see more of your work or get in touch with you, what's the best way? I'm assuming your blog, nonamestocks.com?
That's right. Yep. You can go on there, and there's a page that has my email address. You can contact me.
Okay.
I love getting emails from people. I don't get that many. And there's lots of posts about these tiny, unloved, ugly companies.
Well, you're playing a game that most people don't play, so I wouldn't expect, you know, it's a lonely game to begin with, in a sense, right?
Yeah. It's niche for sure. I mean, I get some emails from people and they tell me how much they love the blog, but I think it takes a certain kind of person.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, hey Dan, this was great. I really appreciated you coming on the show, and I hope that you know, maybe you'll do more in the future.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. All right, well, have a great day, Dan.
Thank you for listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast with Eric Schlein. If you'd like to connect with Eric for questions, comments, feedback, ideas, or to inquire about being on the show, please contact Eric at intelligentinvesting@gmail.com. So, in the words of Charlie Munger, I have nothing to add.